Okay. So the Shira on Parshat Truma is the Mountain Mishkan connection. And this is the Ramban's structure of all of the Parshiyot of the Mishkan. But it's really his structure of the entirety of Sefer Shemot. If you think about Sefer Shemot, it's basically three major subjects. What are the three subjects? Yetziat Mitzrayim, leaving Egypt, receiving the Torah, and the Mishkan. What's the relationship between the three? And obviously, Yetziat Mitzrayim is the first half of Shemot. But in particular, what's the structure of the second half of the Shemot? Ramban is going to answer all of those questions. But first I want to look at Rashi, who's the classical answer based on Chazal. And Rashi's answer is, if we ask the question about the second half of Sefer Shemot, what's the specific question? We have Truma Tetzava Kitisa Vayakel Pekude. So the Jewish people get the Torah. Well, it's really four things that are in Sefer Shemot. You also have Chayta Ega, that's a major topic. Hi, Sheila. Welcome.
Come, we'll share.
So, the structural problem is twofold. First of all, why do we have this repetition of Truma Tetzaveh Vayakel Pekudei? But that's not so troubling, because you have Truma Tetzaveh is the command to build the Mishkan, and Vayakel Pekudei is the actual carrying out of the building of the Mishkan. Of course, you still have the question, why does it need to be repeated all over and over again? That's a different question. But you have beforehand the story of Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah. Then, right, Matan Torah as in HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealing himself to Bnei Israel, giving them the Aseret HaDibrot, and establishing the final covenant between the Jewish people and Hashem. Then Truma Tetzaveh. And then we're told that Moshe goes up to Har Sinai for 4 days, 40 nights. Right? And Truma Tetzaveh, and then it's Chet HaEgel. Right? And then we have Vayakel Pekudei. Right? After Moshe has atoned for the sin of Bnei Israel, we have Vayakel Pekudei. So the question is, what's going on here with the structure, right? Why have Truma Tetzaveh, then the Chet HaEgel, then Vayakel Pekudei? It's a very strange structure. So Rashi's explanation is as follows. So you look at this is Rashi actually in Parshat Ki Tisa, the first source. Rashi Perek Lamed Aleph Eitein El Moshe. This is right after Truma and Tetzaveh, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe to build the Mishkan. He gives Moshe the Luchot. So Rashi here says the Torah goes out of order regularly. Masa Egel Kodem Letzivoyim Lechad Mishkan Liyamim Rabim Haya. The sin of the golden calf preceded the command to build the Mishkan by many days. Meaning that even though Truma Tetzaveh come first, really the story of the sin of the golden calf, which is in Ki Tisa, happened first. Why? This is his genealogy. Sharei b'shivasar b'tamuz nishtabu l'luchot. We know that there's a Masorah, the Luchot were broken on the 17th of Tammuz. Uviyom HaKippurim nitratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Yisrael. Right? A little over 40 days later, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives Bnei Israel on Yom Kippur. U'l'macharat yitchilu b'nei dvat ha-mishkan v'ukam b'echad m'nisan. And they began the building project of the Mishkan the next day, on the 11th of Yom Kippur. Of Tishrei, and then it was built, and then it was completed on the first of Nisan. Right? One of the reasons why we start building the Sukkah on Matzah Yom Kippur is because that's when the building project of the Mishkan, according to Chazal, began.
But Rabbi, also there's that odd thing at the end of Mishpatim where they go on the mountain and they and the 70 people see Hashem,
right,
including Nadav and Avihu. I mean, isn't that? I mean,
well, that's a puzzling story in and of itself. Right. But I think according to both Rashi and Ramban, that is part of the establishing of the covenant. Right, you really, and that's what we saw last week in the Ramban Shir, that there are two different pieces to receiving the Torah. First, HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces the idea of them receiving the Torah. They agree to receive the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them the Aseret HaDibrot in which he reveals himself to Bnei Israel. And once he's revealed himself to Bnei Israel, then they establish the official covenant, and that's what happens at the end of Mishpatim. Right, Yitro is the preparation for the revelation. He reveals himself. He gives over an assortment of mitzvot. Those are the mishpatim, and then they seal the covenant at the end of mishpatim, and that's that story. So that no matter what is connected with the giving of the Torah. The question is, then you have the story of then you have the command to build a mishkan. Right? If you want to say that this is an order, then that happened before Chet HaEgel. According to Rashi, the command to build the Mishkan happened after Chet HaEgel. And Rashi, in the context, over and over again, in the context of telling us about the Mishkan, tells us that the Mishkan was actually a kapara, an atonement, for the sin of the golden calf. Why was it made out of gold? In order to atone for the gold of the golden calf. Did Aaron have such a prominent role to play? Because Aaron had a prominent role to play in the sin. Why specifically inaugurate the Mishkan with a par, with a cow? Because that's what they sinned with. Right? And the Sfarno actually expands Rashi's notion and says that it's in almost Rambamesque terminology that the sin of the golden calf showed that Bnei Israel couldn't just serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the abstract. They needed something concrete to channel their service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? At first, the goal was to rid Bnei Israel of any type of material medium in service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the very possibility, the very use of anything material in service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the potential to turn into Avodah Zarah, but the sin of the golden calf showed that they weren't capable of doing that. So that's what the Sfarno says. And that would explain why you have the sin of the golden calf and then the Mishkan is commanded to be built. What's the major problem with that? You have to posit that the story of Truma Tetzaveh, of the command to build the Mishkan, is completely out of order. Because you have Truma Tetzaveh with the command to build the Mishkan, and it's not till Kitisa after Truma Tetzaveh that you have the Chet HaEgel. The Ramban doesn't have a problem with saying that the Torah can be out of order. But for the Ramban, there has to be a good thematic reason why it's out of order. And here he sees no thematic reason. And it's very interesting, the Ramban, when he disagrees with Rashi in this context, doesn't even quote Rashi. Almost always he quotes Rashi and then he disagrees with him. Here he doesn't even quote Rashi. And what's fascinating is you see from his Hakdama, from his introduction to Sefer Shmot, how the Mishkan, according to the Ramban, was not a post facto creation as a result of the sin of the golden calf. It was part of the ideal goal. So really, there are two Rambans that are part of today's shir, and we might I might even break this shir into two because there's just. There's just so much going on in this Ramban, but what we'll start with the Ramban's introduction, which will at least explain why the Mishkan it had to be in this order. It had to be that the Mishkan is commanded before the Chet HaEgel. So look at the Ramban's Hakdama. So, Hishlim HaKatuv Sefer Breishit, this is the second source, so the psukim complete the book of Breishit, of Genesis, Shehu Sefer Haitzira. The Ramban calls Breishit the book of creation, right, which is very interesting, because Sefer Yitzira is this Kabbalistic work about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's act of creation, but that's not what the Ramban is talking about at all. He's saying that the book of Breishit is a book completely about creation. Right? Now, immediately, we should be thinking, hey, wait a second, most of Breishit isn't about creation, most of Breishit is about the patriarchs, right? So, obviously, the Ramban's going to address that. B'chidush ha'olam, the tzirat kol notzar, in the creation of the world ex nihilo, right, through chidush, through complete creation out of nothing, the tzirat kol notzar, and through the creation of everything that was created, of the mikrei ha'avot, and with all the events that took place with the patriarchs. Shehein ki'inyan yetzira, which are like acts of creation, lizar'am, for their progeny after them. Mipnei, shekom mikrehem tzirei dvarim lirmoz ulhodia kol atid lavo lahem. Because everything that happened to the forefathers is a hint, a foreshadowing of everything that was going to happen to their children after them, right? And this is one of the places where the Ramban refers to his principle Maasei Avot Siman Labanim, that the patriarch's actions are a prototype that foreshadow all the things that are going to happen to Bnei Israel afterward. So Abraham goes down to Egypt, Yitzchak goes down to Egypt, the same way Bnei Israel go down to Egypt. They experience numerous events that Bnei Israel themselves will experience. Right? So what the Ramban is here saying is it's not just that they are experiencing what Bnei Israel are going to experience, they're creating a cyclical pattern of time that will reproduce itself, right? The same way the world is set into motion with creation, the activities, the spiritual challenges and triumphs of Bnei Yisrael are set into motion through the Avot, and that's why their actions comprise part of the Sefer HaYitzirah, the Book of Creation. This is right after that underline in the second line in the Ramban, the second source. After the book of creation is completed, the second book begins, and that book starts with all of those things that are hinted at in the first book. Okay, second paragraph in this first Ramban, the second source. V'nitechet sefer ve'ele shmot b'inyan hagalut harishona nigzar b'feirush uv'ge'ula mimenu. The book of Shmot is all about that first galut, right? In contrast to the second and third exiles. The first exile, which unlike the second and third exiles, are mentioned explicitly in the Torah, uv'ge'ula mimenu, and in redemption from it, right? That's what all of Sefer Shmot is like. So this is a wonderful parallel to the first paragraph in the Ramban. Just like the first paragraph in the Ramban, he says, Sefer Breishit is all about creation. The problem is that it's really only the first part of Sefer Breishit that's about creation. Here too, he says, Sefer Shmot is all about the Shibud Mitzrayim, the servitude to Egypt, and the redemption from it. But really, that's really only the first half of Sefer Shmot. But now the Ramban explains what he means. First he explains, why does the Torah retell the story of the 70 progeny of Yaakov, his family, all going down to Egypt at the beginning of Sefer Shemot? Because that's what Sefer Shemot is about. Even though it already happened in Sefer Breishit, it has to be retold in Sefer Shemot, because Sefer Shemot starts with the official galut of Egypt starting, and that starts when the family of 70 goes down. Right? Even though this has already been written in Sefer Breishit, ki ridatam sham hu reshit hagalut ki mi az huchal. This is the beginning of the galut. Right? Vihine hagalut einenu nishlam. Right, we could call the Yiridah to Mitzrayim in the time of Yaakov as Reshit Tzmichat Galutenu, Reshit Hagalut, Vinei Hagalut. This is the underline, the final line in the second paragraph. Vinei Hagalut Einenu Nishlam. This exile doesn't end ad Yom Shuvam El Mikovam Ve'el Ma'alat Avotam Yashuvu. This exile does not end until they return to their place and to the level of their fathers. So how, right? The exile doesn't end in Sefer Bishalach, as we normally might think, when they cross the sea and are finally rid of the Mitzrim. It only ends once they return to the level of their fathers from that Sefer Yetzirah, the first book of Bereishit, right? And we can already imagine, based on where Shemot ends, when that happens. So now this is the final paragraph. Ukshiatsumi Mitzrayim. When they left Egypt, right? When they left Egypt, you can take the Jews out of Egypt. It's not so easy to take the Egypt out of the Jews. They were still servants. They still had a slave mentality. They still were in Egypt in their thoughts, right? They still were considered themselves to be in exile. Ki hayu ba'aretz lo lahem, because they were in a land not theirs. Nevuchim ba'midbar, and even afterward, they were all caught up in the wilderness. It's so interesting that, right, Paro says Nevuchim heim ba'aretz. Paro, we think that Paro is misreading the reality when he says that Bnei Yisrael are wandering around all bewildered and stuck in the wilderness. He wasn't misreading the reality at all. They were bewildered until what? Ukishabo el Har Sinai. It's only once they arrive at Har Sinai, Vasu HaMishkan, and they create the Mishkan, right? And you see these two events are integrally connected. They arrive at Har Sinai and have the revelation in Har Sinai, and they arrive at the Mishkan and they have the revelation at the Mishkan. V'shava HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'hishrash Shekhinat HaMene. Kadosh Baruch Hu returns and he causes his indwelling amongst Bnei Yisrael to rest upon them. Az shavu el ma'alat avotam. That's when they returned to the level of their forefathers Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Shehayasod eloka alei aholehem. That was the secret of godliness that rested above their tents. Right? And it's so interesting. Aholehem, you have the Ohel Moed, and you have the tents of Bnei Yisrael. The tents where they lived in the Midbar, and the tents and the tent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which was the Mishkan. V'heim heim ha-merkava. This is a fascinating statement in the Gemara, that avot heim heim ha-merkava, the patriarchs were the chariot work of Yechezkel and Yeshayahu. Right? That great scene that we describe and retell in the Kedusha, where Yechezkel and Yeshayahu have their initial revelation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they see the angels praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu upon his throne, which is this chariot. What are they saying? What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's real chariot? His real chariot, right? What does a chariot mean? It means the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins to travel into this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is completely transcendent. Right, and there's just a small piece of him that he allows us in this world to see, and it's how he travels into this world. And Yeshayahu and Yechezkel see it as this sublime thing way up in heaven. But what the Gemara says is, even that heavenly experience is still a very imminent experience. It's still this world, because God is completely transcendent. The Avot are the Merkava. These people who live in a godly way are the act of HaKadosh Baruch Hu traveling into this world, right? And the Avot weren't the only ones who are the Merkava. That's what the Ramban is saying here somewhat radically. Bnei Yisrael continue to be the Merkava by being the Mishkan. And the fact of the matter is, it isn't so radical when you realize that what Yechezkel and Yeshayahu are really seeing are their vision of the Beit HaMikdash as it was supposed to be. As it wasn't, but as it was supposed to be. Either before it was destroyed, or as it was about to be destroyed. So Bnei Yisrael, they can be the Avot also. They can also be the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's a place of his way of traveling into this world. So at that point, as shavu l'malat avotam shaya soda loa aleya lo aholehem, again the final underline, v'hem hem amerkava, they were this source of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's throne, his traveling into this world, v'az nechshavu gulim. Only then, when they returned to their forefathers' level of Kedusha, of having HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwelling amongst them, were they truly redeemed. They weren't redeemed when they left Egypt. They weren't redeemed when they crossed the Red Sea. They were redeemed when HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused his Shekhinah to dwell amongst them. Right? And that doesn't even happen at Har Sinai. And Har Sinai is the initial revelation. But the actual act of HaKadosh Baruch Hu causing himself to remain dwelling amongst Bnei Israel happens when they build the Mishkan, right? V'lachei nishlama sefer hazeh, and now the Ramban tells us, this is the reason why Shemot is completed, right? B'inyan ha-mishkan uveyot kvod Hashem malei ato tamid. With the topic of the Mishkan's completion, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence filling it forever, for eternity, right? That's the end of Shemot. That's the completion of the redemption. Because redemption is not just leaving a place where you were slaves. It is spiritually being redeemed. So this explains, we'll leave for next week, the precise details of how of the relationship between the mountain and the Mishkan. We'll call the next week the Mountain Mishkan Connection Part 2. But this explains at least why the Ramban clearly sees Truma and Tetzava as belonging right after the revelation. It doesn't come before Kitisa, before the Chet HaEgel. It belongs here. The whole point was HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Bnei Yisrael. He commanded Moshe the moment he goes up to Har Sinai for that first 40 days and 40 nights. He says, Bnei Israel just had me reveal myself to them. Now you need to create a context for that revelation to remain. And that's what's going to happen when you come down and build the Mishkan. What's the problem? After Tetzave, he comes down at the beginning of Kitisa, and the whole project gets derailed by the Chet HaEgel. Right? That's the structure, according to the Ramban. Kitisa belongs right after Truma Tetzave, right? Whereas Rashi, who says that the Mishkan is a result of the need to atone for the Chet HaEgel, has to basically say the order doesn't matter. The fact that they were commanded about the Mishkan, or were told about the command of the Mishkan before the Chet HaEgel, doesn't matter, because the command actually came after the Chet HaEgel. For the Ramban, it belongs exactly here, because this is the whole point of revealing himself at Har Sinai, that he continue to dwell amongst Bnei Yisrael. We don't have time to go into this in depth, but I'll leave you with a question and perhaps the beginning of an answer. This is a Ramban for another time, but if you look at the final line of the second paragraph of this first Ramban that we just read, again, we'll leave the second Ramban completely for next week, but this line, V'hine ha-galut eno nishlam ad yom shuvam el mikomam ve'el malat avotam yashuv. The exile is not completed until the moment that they return to their place and to the level of their forefathers. there's something very radical about the idea that Bnei Yisrael, with the building of the Mishkan, had returned to their place. And it's especially radical according to the Ramban. What's radical about this, even if you don't know anything else about what the Ramban's theology?
He's not mentioning anything about Eretz Yisrael.
Exactly. Right? What do you mean, returning to their place? They haven't returned to their place at the end of Sefer Shmot.
Maybe their place spiritually.
Okay, so clearly, Sheila's 100% right. What the Ramban means is their spiritual place. Right? And when they left Egypt, they might have been redeemed from their exile and the locale of their exile, which was Egypt, but they still hadn't returned to their proper place.
Well,
in terms of actually being spiritually in the right place, right? But to say it's still something quite radical to say they could be leaving Egypt and in the Midbar and they're not yet in Eretz Yisrael and they're already in their place, in the right place, because they're spiritually in the right place, because they've emerged out of the 49 rungs of impurity. Now, I say that this is especially strange and difficult to understand according to the Ramban. Why? Because we'll see the Ramban in other comments makes some very radical statements about the importance of living in Israel. And he said, so much so, he says, that after the second exile, right, we're living outside of Israel. We're commanded to keep the entire Torah, but even our keeping the entire Torah in exile now is really a practice for when we end up back in Israel. Because our keeping mitzvah outside of the land of Israel, it's just not the same. God's goal is for us to keep mitzvah in Israel. When we keep them outside of Israel, it's a second best. It's not the way God had planned it. Right? Well, it's not what the Ramban seems to be saying here. Here he seems to be saying even more than that. He's saying we can return to the level of the Avot, who, by the way, lived in the land of Israel. We can return to their place, spiritual place, even though we're not yet in the land of Israel.
Yeah, he's not saying it
right
explicitly, but he could be saying that the initial Avraham first had contact with Hashem outside of Eretz Israel. Lech lecha elah. You know what I'm saying? That this is returning to that initial thing where they're going to have a regular, they're going to start to establish their contact with Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
And just like Abraham going up to the land, they're going to go up.
Interesting.
To the land.
So they're starting there.
Right.
They're returning to their to the original place of Abraham to start their journey.
It might be in a different place, but it's still the same spiritual place.
Okay, I hear you. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you think about it, when does Avraham reach his level of the level of spirituality we think of Avraham reaching? When he reaches Israel, right? That's when he first calls out in the name of Hashem. It's interesting, you know. Chazal have the whole backstory of Avraham calling out in Hashem's name in Haran and in Ur Kasdim, but the way it's described in the Torah, he's not really able to call in God's name until he gets to Eretz Yisrael. And that's the first time he builds a Mizbeach. That's when he, you know, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem over and over again. He goes all over Israel building these Mizbachot and calling in Hashem's name. So it is a little bit strange. Just a possible answer that my father suggested to me that I like very much. Is it possible that according to the Ramban, the land of Israel is critical? But why is the land of Israel critical? The land of Israel became critical when Bnei Israel finally settled there and built the Beit HaMikdash there. Until they built the Beit HaMikdash there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence rested not in the land of Israel, but amongst them. Right, the Beit HaMikdash is the final resting place for Hashem's name. And even there, it can leave if Bnei Israel sin and pollute it. But the Mishkan is a portable Beit HaMikdash that has God's name in its midst. So they hadn't yet made it to the land of Israel, but they were at their spiritual place because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence was dwelling in their midst. Once they come to Israel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence dwells in the land of Israel, radiating out from the place of the Beit HaMikdash. And this gets into a discussion of the fact that the second time when they returned after the second Galut, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, the Kedusha, was established for that time and for all future time. And even after the Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the Kedusha remained there. So it's fixed there. We're not bringing it with us, at least in any significant way, except for in our Mikdash Ma'at in the Beit Knesset. But it doesn't have the same level, definitely, as this Mishkan, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's immediate presence in the most concentrated way, following Bnei Israel around wherever they are. Again, I'm not saying that you have to take the radical reading of the Ramban that everything about our lives now in Galut is the second best, almost a practice for when we come back to Israel. It's just a question of, well, how do you even understand the same Ramban who utters those words saying here that they are returning shuvam el mikomam to their place at that moment. And I think this is one way of resolving that problem. But we will with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, return to this topic at a later time. Next week we'll return to the topic of the specifics of the relationship between the Mishkan and the mountain, because the Ramban has a lot more to say on this and a lot more to say about the very specific structure of the second half of Shemot, now that we understand the Ramban's conception of the entire way the book of Shemot fits with the beginning of the Galut at the beginning of Sefer Shemot and the completion of the Galut when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reestablishes himself, Kvod Hashem Maleit HaMishkan, the final pasuk in Sefer Shemot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reestablishes his place in the midst of Bnei Israel, causing the redemption from Egypt.
It seems now that the Ramban is